evidence that Osama bin Laden was behind the attacks.
Although he said he was.
Well, what we have is a video that is purportedly Osama bin Laden on it, but many people who are experts in these matters say it's a fake. So all we know is that the government produced a video they said was found in Afghanistan, in which someone purportedly being Osama bin Laden said this, but he, you know, he weighs, he's much heavier than bin Laden. He was darker. He has different facial structure. And also he said a lot of things on there that were strange that bin Laden would not have said.
Do you doubt that the president was warned back in August 2001 that Osama bin Laden was about to attack the United States?
Oh, sure. There were there were warnings. There was a famous August 6th warning. There were all sorts of warnings, and in a recent book, 9/11 Contradictions, an open letter to Congress and the press, I have a whole chapter that's based on the assumption that it wasn't an inside job, but that the, you know, the Bush administration just decided to let Al-Qaeda attack America, that there were all sorts of warnings.
So are you suggesting that that's a possibility, that the administration knew that bin Laden was going to attack and decided to let him get on with it?
No, I don't consider that a possibility.
Right.
But I say if one did, then they still have the problem that there are all these warnings. But there are just too many things about the event that bin Laden and Al-Qaeda could not have carried out. For one thing, most obviously, they could not have got in. You know, we've just got dozens, really hundreds, of physicists, chemists, architects, engineers, who now say there is simply no doubt about the fact that the buildings were brought down by explosives.
But surely, Professor Griffin, you've got the American Society of Civil Engineers and FEMA, and they conducted an investigation at the World Trade Center. You've got the Director of Structural Engineering Institute of the American Society of Civil Engineers. You've got the Senior Fire Investigator for the National Fire Protection Association. You've got professors of fire safety. You've got leaders of building design engineering firms, blah, blah. That investigation concluded that massive structural damage caused by the crashing of the aircraft into the buildings, plus the subsequent fires, were sufficient to induce the collapse of both structures.
Well, of course.
Are they in on it as well?
FEMA is, well, they're in on the cover up. Now, FEMA actually did a better job than NIST, which has put out the official report now, NIST being the National Institute of Standards and Technology. But just as FEMA is part of the government, so is NIST. NIST is a part of the Department of Commerce and therefore a part of the Bush-Cheney administration.
So you're suggesting, just to keep track on this, the American Society of Civil Engineers and FEMA and NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and Popular Mechanics, and everybody who has said that aircraft crashing into the World Trade Center are most likely responsible for its destruction, all these people are in on a plot to deceive.
Well, certainly NIST and Popular Mechanics. With FEMA and the AFCE, it's uncertain because they were really not allowed to get in and carry on any real kind of investigation. They were cordoned off and just kind of allowed to have a little tour through the building. So they really couldn't do a serious study, although they did put in an appendix to the FEMA report by these three fire professors from Worcester Polytechnic Institute, who reported that there were very strange things happening to the steel, that big pieces of, you know, beams of steel were turned into what looked like Swiss cheese. I mean, there were holes in them, and they were thinned down to more than half of their size, and they contained sulfur. They were sulfidized, oxidized. So they had melted. So the temperatures the steel was subjected to was several thousands of degrees Fahrenheit. We talk Fahrenheit over here. And fire in the hottest building fire could not possibly get over 1,800 degrees. To even begin melting steel, you have to get up to 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. To do this kind of melting, it would have to be much hotter. So they themselves showed evidence that the fire theory was incorrect, incomplete, therefore incorrect.
I don't know what the explanation is for the molten steel, but you have pointed to the fact that steel high rises have never fallen from fire. But then steel high rises have never been hit before with a plane.
Well, that's not true.
Traveling at 500 miles an hour.
The Empire State Building was hit by a plane. Now, it was a smaller plane, but of course the Empire State Building was much smaller than the Twin Towers. Furthermore, we've got Building 7, which is the biggest embarrassment to the official story. This was a 47-story building that was not hit by a plane, and yet came down at 5:20 that afternoon in a perfect exemplification, a perfect mimicry of a controlled demolition of the classic type, an implosion, where the building simply caves in the middle and falls in on itself, and fell in less than 7 seconds. So we're talking virtually free fall speed here. So they don't have any, you know, they can't appeal to the plane idea.
Why don't you believe the explanation that Building 7 fell because it was so severely damaged by the damage incurred by the World Trade Center towers?
Well, because, first of all, it wasn't. And secondly, even if it had been, it could not produce that kind of full straight down. We're talking a vertical collapse here. This means that this building had 81 steel columns going from the sub-basements to the top of the building. All 81 steel columns have to fail simultaneously on these various floors in order to get this kind of vertical collapse. So it is just scientifically impossible. And you've got all of these government and semi-official reports like Popular Mechanics. But if you go on Patriots Question 9/11 Truth, look under engineers and architects, and you will see hundreds of engineers and architects licensed who say the official story simply cannot be true, and they're demanding a new investigation.
So when the National Institute of Standards and Technology says it sees no evidence that the collapse of World Trade Center 7 was caused by bombs, missiles, or controlled demolition, it is either lying or it hasn't looked properly.
Well, it's clearly lying, those two alternatives. Some of the scientists who've done the most work on this, Stephen Jones and Kevin Ryan among them, have written letters to NIST demanding responses to, for example, why, when you say you saw no evidence, did you ignore the 503 testimonies of firefighters and emergency medical workers, over 100 of which reported more or less massive explosions going off in the building? Why did you not mention any of those?
And those explosions had nothing to do with the fact that there were fuel tanks in the basement and on some of the floors. That fueled the fire in Building 7 that lasted for, they estimate, about 8 hours.
Well, that's a theory. It is not a proven fact. And FEMA, which put out an explanation of Building 7 on that basis, constructed a scenario in which they said beams came over from the North Tower, hit the building, went in, set that thing on fire, and it caused a huge conflagration. First of all, there was no huge fire in Building 7. NIST itself says there were fires only on 6 of the 47 floors. This building was not engulfed in fire. Secondly, they said, now here's our theory, but then at the end they said, this theory has only a low probability of occurrence. And when you're talking about the Twin Towers, there was no such source of fuel in the building, and the jet fuel would have burned up, and NIST itself agrees on this, within 20 minutes, and yet these massive explosions, most of them occurred just before the building came down. Now, a few occurred much earlier on. One occurred in the basement even an hour and a half before the North Tower came down. But most of them occurred long after the jet fuel would have burned up. So there was no source of all these explosions. And furthermore, these explosions were massive. They sent huge sections of beams, the vertical beams that were around the perimeter of the towers, hurling out horizontally 500 to 600 feet. Some of them plastered in neighboring buildings, so they're captured on video that you can see in Loose Change, Final Cut, and 9/11 Mysteries.
All right, so you're suggesting that the U.S. administration deliberately killed 3,000 of its own people in order to justify a war in Iraq.
Well, to justify lots of things, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Why wouldn't they have blamed, why wouldn't they have set it up so that it looked like Iraq had done the attacks then? There were no Iraqis involved.
Well, the first thing is they'd been setting up Osama bin Laden for many years as terrorist number one, even though they made no effort to capture him, and even when he was in the American hospital in Dubai, they made no effort to capture him.
But why would they have bothered setting him up if he had nothing to do with the place they really wanted to attack?
Well, as I was going to say, they did want to attack Afghanistan. They had worked out plans in the previous July, at the latest, to attack Afghanistan. And one American had even was reported as saying that, you know, the wars will start before the snows of October, and certainly they did. So Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, they were the plausible terrorists, and they knew they could warp it very quickly. All they had to do was have this anthrax scare, and this is big stuff in the news now, that they're clearly trying to frame this Ivans, who really couldn't have had anything to do with this.
Why couldn't he have had anything to do with it?
Well, his lab wasn't equipped to make this weapons-grade anthrax. And this story is completely falling apart. I can't go into the details now, but my point is they knew that once they had established that Muslim terrorists had attacked America, they could twist this. All they had to do was do the anthrax scare, tell people it was from Iraq, which they did, and then do their lie about weapons of mass destruction, and also their lie about Osama bin Laden working with Saddam Hussein at one time. More than 60% of the American people believe that. So it was very easy to turn this thing. They didn't have to have any Iraqi hijackers. You know, you go with the patsies you have, to paraphrase Rumsfeld, not necessarily with the patsies you would like to have. And what they had were members of al-Qaeda who were basically from Saudi Arabia living in Afghanistan.
What happened if it was an inside job and the World Trade Center was blown up? What happened to the plane?
Well, that's a big topic in itself.
Well, yeah, it's quite big.
Yeah, and there are different theories about that, and one doesn't have to know exactly how they did it to know that...
one has to have a fair idea, Professor Griffin, otherwise, you know, you sound like a lunatic with Felix.
Well, not truly. Just imagine if somebody framed you for a murder and produced what looked like to the jury a pretty strong evidence. You know, they show that you hated so-and-so, and then you find that they've got a video of you doing this, and they fabricated the video and so on. And you know you're innocent. You say, absolutely no, I didn't do this. And they say, okay, to clear yourself, you've got to tell us who did it and how they did it.
All right. Well, I'm not asking for details such as that. I'm merely suggesting to you that, for example, if you say the Pentagon wasn't hit by Flight 77... Where's Flight 77, do you think? Could it possibly be where?
Well, there are dozens of places it possibly could have gone to.
Well, where are all the people?
Well, there are dozens of places all those people could have gone to, too. You know, we just don't know.
But they'd be in some holding camp somewhere, held there by the Bush administration. Is that what you're suggesting?
There are lots of possibilities. They could have been killed and then taken to the morgue. They could have been paid off and shipped off to a desert island somewhere, people who wanted new identities. There are all these theories, there are possibilities. There was a highly credible report that the FAA believed that a flight had gone down that morning on the Ohio-Kentucky border. Later they told us, oh no, that was just a mistake, but it's possible that Flight 77, like Flight 93, went down before it hit its target. I don't know. I say there are, you know, people had had theories that it flew it out to the ocean and sunk it. We just don't know. What we know is there is absolutely no evidence that a 757 hit the Pentagon, no credible evidence.
Why is there no evidence? I thought that there was evidence.
No, what you've got is a few people who said, oh yeah, we saw an American airline coming towards the Pentagon. But if you look at, and I've dealt with this all in my forthcoming book, which is the new Pearl Harbor Revisited.
Yes.
New evidence about the Pentagon. I quote several people in there, you know, just ordinary workers in the Pentagon and firefighters who came, and they all get there and they say, where's the plane? So it's just like Flight 93, the Shanksville. People get there and say, you know, there's no plane here. There's got to be wings, there's got to be an engine, there's got to be a tail section.
Hang on. I understand that one of your arguments is that the hole in the Pentagon was too small to allow a plane of that size to get in. A, the hole is bigger than you said it was, and B, the wings sheared off in the impact, therefore you wouldn't need to get a whole damn plane through the hole.
Now, who told you the wings sheared off?
I read it somewhere.
You're right. You can read all sorts of things.
Wouldn't they shear off?
Well, if they had sheared off, somebody would have seen them. Nobody reports seeing any wings. Jamie McIntyre, a reporter for ABC, goes up there and he says, you know, there's nothing here bigger than what I can hold in my hand. There's no wing, there's no fuselage, there are no, you know. Now, that's outside the Pentagon. Inside the Pentagon, the people say the same thing. They said, I walked right through the area where the plane was supposed to be. There was nothing. So you've got all those people inside the Pentagon, all the people outside the Pentagon. There's no plane there. You got the photographs outside the Pentagon. There's no plane there. This plane allegedly came in at ground floor level. You know, almost everybody who was killed on the first floor or the second floor. The plane hit roughly in between the first two floors, very close to the ground. The engines stick under the wings, and yet there are no grooves in the yard. So this pilot, who of course was an amateur, Ani Honjur, couldn't fly a little Piper Cub, flew this thing in there at ground level without even scratching the Pentagon lawn. I say, when you go through, all the evidence shows there was simply no 757 hit the Pentagon.
Although I'd really like some indication of where you think 64 people have been spirited away to.
Well, I would love to know too, but how in the world could I know?
Well, you know, I tell you the most compelling argument against your theory is that you are, and many people have pointed this out, you're talking about an administration that has proved incompetence in all sorts of areas. I mean, Hurricane Katrina, whatever. How could it possibly hold thousands and thousands and thousands of people to some vow of silence in order to make this plot happen?
Well, that's not as difficult as you might imagine. First of all, this idea that people cannot keep secrets in the government is simply not true.
But we're not talking about just in the government. We're talking about a huge array of people in, yes, the government, and also, I mean, the organizations that we've mentioned, you know, the National Institute of Standards and Technology and Society of Civil Engineers and FEMA. People in there, all of them, sworn to silence and keeping silent.
Well, let's take NIST. We've got a whistleblower who's come forward, who's talked to Stephen Jones, our leading physicist, and said, look, when I was at NIST, the organization had become totally politicized. Everything we do has to pass muster with about three or four external agencies besides the Commerce Department. There's a person assigned from the White House to deal, review everything we write. And the NIST scientists have become no more than hired guns. And He said, now I quit, but many of my friends are still there, and they don't like it. They hate what they're doing, but, you know, they need their jobs. We know of firefighters who said, look, everybody knows, we all know there were massive explosions going off in all three buildings, but if we go forward, we lose our jobs, we lose our pensions, how do we support our families? It goes on, and, you know, threats can be worse than just losing your job, too.
It seems to me that a lot of the theories, your conspiracy theory, other people's conspiracy theory, I mean, they're getting pretty wild out there, you know, the word.
Well, you want to know the wildest conspiracy theory?
Yeah.
Try this. Osama bin Laden inspires 19 young men who really cannot fly airplanes very well to hijack four airliners. They get into the cockpits, amazingly, even though there's a standard code for all pilots. It takes about 2 seconds to put it in. You punch in 7500. That's the hijack code. On all four planes, none of the pilots did this, even though on Flight 93, according to the official story, it was going on 30 seconds before the hijackers actually got in there and took over. Nobody punches in that code. Then these guys, like Hani Hanjour, who could not fly a Piper Cub, flies this amazing downward spiral to come in and hit the Pentagon at ground level. And then the other pilots hit two buildings and are able to bring three of them down at free fall speed, perfectly mimicking controlled demolitions. That is the wildest conspiracy.
Well, it is wild, except that when you take it apart and you look at the way the building fell, there's a perfectly reasonable explanation as to why the building fell like that. Well, I'm sorry, but I mean, as far as I know, it had its vertical load-bearing columns in the core removed by an airliner. Why isn't that feasible?
Well, just a minute, Kim. The airliner hit up there in the around the 80th floor in one building, around the 95th floor in the other. If even plausible that it could have knocked out all, you know, we've got 47 core columns in these buildings. There's extreme redundancy here. And NIST does not even try to claim that they knocked out 47 core columns. They claim that implausibly that they knocked out 10 in the South Tower. And that's on a few floors. These are 110-story buildings. What about all those floors underneath, all those massive columns? These core columns were truly massive at the bottom, several inches thick and about a yard, what we call a yard, close to a meter in length. All those succeeding floors down below the 80th floor, the 95th floor, all of those floors suddenly disappear. When the top part of the building starts coming down, it comes down through the path of greatest resistance. All of that concrete, those thousands of tons of steel and concrete, the thing comes down in 10 seconds. The 9/11 Commission even admitted that. That is virtually free fall speed. That is like you drop a ball from the top of the building, and the speed of the ball hitting the ground, it would be like you dropped it on the top of the building and it went right down through the building as if the building weren't there. That's essentially what they're saying. That's absolutely absurd. That violates certain basic laws of Newtonian physics. First of all, the principle of the conservation of momentum. It's just physically impossible for that to happen.
I don't want to be disrespectful, but you have the American Society of Civil Engineers and FEMA, who say, you know, once the collapse started, then you had a 20-story building and a 30-story building acting as very large masses. They push everything down, and you have a professor of philosophy and theology who's telling me that's not physically possible. Who do I believe?
Well, I would say you believe the independent physicists and architects and engineers who are not government employed, don't have to tell a certain story in order to keep their paycheck. In fact, some of them have lost their jobs because of what they're saying. And just look at certain basic laws of physics. I mean, you've got some physicists around there. Ask them about the law of the conservation of momentum. Have them read this request for clarification that Stephen Jones and others have sent in complaining about the violation of the conservation law. Read all of these statements of architects and engineers. I am just giving voice to the results of all of these professionals, pilots and architects, engineers, physicists and chemists and all, and including military people and former CIA officials, who say the official story is just impossible. So, you know, the fact that I happen to be a philosopher, what we do is assemble evidence and evaluate it and use certain principles of logic. You don't have to be a physicist to see that people who are called physicists are violating certain basic principles of logic and certain principles of evidence. You have to take account of total evidence.
That's Professor David Ray Griffin. For the record, Professor Griffin does not believe the lone gunman theory with regard to the assassination of President Kennedy, but he has no reason to doubt that Americans landed on the moon.